And we are recording.
Thank you very much. I would like to call this meeting of the Renewal Enterprise District on October 26th at 1 p.m. to order. Michelle, would you please conduct a roll call?
I will. Let me do one thing really quick here. All right. Supervisor Zane?
Here.
Councilmember Tibbetts?
Here.
Chairperson Fleming?
Here.
And Supervisor Rabbit has an excused absence. He has a conflicting meeting today.
Thank you very much. Item two, public comment on matters not listed on the agenda but within the subject matter of the jurisdiction of this board. Michelle, would you play any recorded public comment received prior to the meeting?
We didn't receive any public comment submitted prior to the meeting, but can we take a step backward back to item number one?
I skipped a step.
Yes.
So going back to item one, let's see. Has everybody had a chance to decide on whether or not you'll approve the agenda from this board meeting?
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
Great. Michelle, do we need a vote on this?
We don't need a roll call vote on this. We'll just record a unanimous vote with one absent.
Awesome. Thank you. So now we are on to item two, public comment on matters not agendized. And as previously stated by Michelle, there were no comments received prior to the meeting. Michelle, can you check and see if there are any attendees who would like to make public comment, please?
So if any of the attendees would like to make a public comment, please raise your hand. And if you're attending by phone, press *9 to indicate that you'd like to make a comment. And Hannah will look at the attendees and see if we have any hands raised.
It's giving them a moment here. And at this time, I see no hands raised.
Okay, thank you very much. Are we good to move on to item three, consent calendar? Great. item 3A, approved minutes of August 26, 2020 meeting. Does anybody have any thing that they want to amend to that?
Amend what?
are the meeting minutes from August 26th all right with you?
Yes.
Okay. Were we all here for that meeting? Nope. So I'm going to suggest, and I don't know if I need to make a motion, that we put off approval of the minutes until we have a quorum that can vote on it.
We do have the Reg General Counsel in the attendee room right now. And we can, if you'd like, you can just go ahead with that plan, or we can ask her her advice on whether we should wait until we have Supervisor Rabbit available to vote on the minute.
My gut says, like, why don't we just wait for him to do it so that we just cover our bases? It doesn't seem to me to be urgent that we approve the minute today. Does anybody disagree? Okay.
All right, so we will continue that particular item to the next agenda.
Thank you very much. Item 3B, approve year-to-date financial reports. Does anybody have anything on that?
No.
Okay. Michelle, did you receive any comments prior to the meeting?
I didn't receive any public comment prior to the meeting on any of these consent items.
Okay. Oh, I guess I'll just bring them forward all at once for vote. And then item 3C, authorize adoption of resolution to set regular board meetings the third Monday of every other month and approve 2021 meeting schedule. Any questions from board members? Okie dokie. And like you said, there was no comment. Prior to taking a vote on the consent calendar, are there any live public comments?
So any member of the public wishing to comment can either raise their hand, or if you're attending by phone, you can press star 9 and we'll watch for hands raised.
Given them another minute again, but at this time I'm seeing no hands raised.
Okay, does the board wish to, we'll wait a moment.
And still no hands raised.
Also just a CYA, I'm gonna open public comment. And now I'm gonna close public comment. And
item B and C of the consent calendar and wait for the reading of the text.
Fantastic. Can I get a second?
Second.
Sweet. Roll call vote, please.
Supervisor Zane?
Aye.
Councilmember Tibbetts?
Aye.
Chairperson Fleming?
Aye.
So we'll record 3 ayes and 1 absent for Supervisor
Wonderful.
Rabbit.
Moving right along here. Item 4A, Executive Director Professional Services Agreement, which will authorize the chair of the board to amend the professional services agreement with Michelle Whitman as Executive Director of the Renewal Enterprise District with annual compensation not to exceed $140,000 plus benefits allowance as prescribed in the professional service agreement. Red Legal Counsel Karen Murphy from Burke Williams and Sorensen is going to make a presentation.
Thank you. And I apologize that my video is so dark. I lost power, so I'm at a location where I normally don't participate in meetings.
As long as you're not in the Federal Witness Protection Program.
It was in the Federal Witness Program, yeah.
It does look like that. So thank you. Good afternoon, board members, and it is nice to meet you virtually. This is an item requesting that the chair enter into a First Amendment to the Professional Services Agreement with Michelle Whitman as Executive Director of REED to clarify that the maximum compensation of $200,000 shall be provided on an annual basis. As you know, REED entered into a Professional Services Agreement dated July 22nd, 2019. Hiring Ms. Whitman to perform the professional services of executive director. The agreement provides that the maximum compensation shall not exceed $200,000 with an estimated annual budget of $189,000, which consists of annual fees of $140,000 and a benefit load of $49,000. This First Amendment would clarify that maximum compensation of $200,000 would be provided on an annual basis. As the agreement has now been in place for over a year. The annual budget of $189,000 consisting of the fees and benefit loads would not be amended. So the only change to this amendment is providing that the maximum compensation is annual. And the recommendation again is to authorize the chair to execute the First Amendment, and I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Questions from the board, please.
Yeah, I had one. Is there a cost of living increase from this last year in this?
There is not. It basically keeps the same compensation and same budget amendment. Ms. Whitman, if you'd like to add anything.
I would like to add that I'm trying to stay within a really pretty strict budget here. And well, if I had employees to look out for, that cost of living increase would be important. I think in the spirit of staying within our budget and trying to keep the RED fully funded on the Hewlett Foundation grant through the end of this fiscal year, I'd be more comfortable with keeping the compensation as is with no cost of living increase. But I appreciate the question.
Might I follow up on that question? Michelle, I recognize that this puts you in, we can see you.
Now we can see you.
Yeah, I just moved around. So that
it just moved around on my coats on your face, yeah.
Would a reasonable cost of living, and I recognize that this puts you in a really difficult position because we're talking about your compensation, would a reasonable cost of living increase jeopardize our ability to stay within our funding?
I'd have to take it out somewhere else. I also have been billing pretty well underneath the budget. And for example, because this is a contract position, I don't bill for holidays or, if I work 7 hours in a day, I'm not going to bill for 8 hours. So it's billed for time spent. So again, I appreciate the interest, and generally it is, important to provide cost of living allowances and increases. Under these circumstances, I would just have to carve it out somewhere else in the budget or risk not having the RED fully funded through the end of this fiscal year.
Okay. My concern is that, when stewarding public funds, one of the things that we want to make sure to do is to not have like a situation where if we were to not do a cost of living for a couple of years, and then we need to keep you within like reasonable like comps on compensation, that we would have a big spike and that would be perceived in a way that's less than what we're trying to do. So if the other board members concur, I'm okay to forego it this year. It's not my favorite choice, but I would be reluctant to continue that unless we had significant budgetary problems for much longer than that.
Mm-hmm. And, I would just add to that, because this is a contract, you're not getting paid for holidays, correct? And vacation time. Yeah, your benefits mainly have to do with health and retirement, correct?
Right.
Yeah, so to me, this is pretty low. I mean, we're getting a great deal here, especially given the fact that you raised $38 million. I mean, we're getting a sweet deal. I want to emphasize that, Michelle. You are one of the hardest workers I know. And I speak from 8 years experience with you. So I think that we're getting a very sweet deal, and I would go along with what your recommendation is this year, but next year I would really want to say that needs to be examined by the new board in terms of a raise.
I appreciate that.
Any other comments or questions from the board? Okay. Are there any public comments that were recorded prior to the meeting?
We didn't receive any public comments in advance of the meeting on this item.
Okay, I will, let me back up and again, open it up to public comment, of which there were none submitted prior to the meeting. Are there any members of the public wishing to make a comment? Please press nine if you would like to.
And I am not seeing any raised hands at the moment.
Give it another second. And we will close public comment. Let's see, anything else before we take a vote? All right, can I get a motion and a second, please?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call vote, please.
Supervisor Zane?
Aye.
Council Member Tippett?
Aye.
Chairperson Fleming?
Aye.
We'll record 3 ayes and 1 absent for Supervisor Rebel.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Karen.
Thank you, Karen.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you.
Okay. Hannah, I'm sorry, through the chair. Mm-hmm. Hannah, is it possible to return Karen to an attendee position, or will she remain as a panelist now?
I can move her back to the attendees for you, 1 second.
Great.
All right, item 4B, delegate authority to contract for grant consultation services. Delegate authority to the RED Executive Director to contract for consulting services as necessary for grant applications that may be submitted for the State of California Housing and Community Development funding opportunities, including the Infill Infrastructure Grant and Affordable Housing, Sustainable Communities, AHSC Grant, 2 programs to support affordable infill transit-oriented housing development, and delegate authority for this purpose shall, delegated authority shall not exceed $20,000. Michelle, your presentation, please.
Okay, it'll take me just a moment to share my screen. All right. Thank you, Chairperson Fleming. So today I'm requesting authority, as I did just about this time last year, to contract for consulting services, if needed, for grant applications that may be submitted to the State of California's Housing and Community Development Department, including for the Infill Infrastructure Grant and possibly for the Affordable Housing Sustainable Communities Grant. Both programs, as I think you know, support affordable infill transit-oriented housing, which is perfectly aligned with the RED's purpose. So a little background quickly on the Infill Infrastructure Grant. While the Notice of Funding Availability, the NOFA, isn't out yet, Housing and Community Development staff has told me there will be approximately $160 million available in the upcoming funding round. And that's compared to $194 million that was available in the last round. The rumor was that this round might only have $50 million. So it was really good news when they bumped up to $160 million. I expect, though, that the reduction will make this round a bit more competitive than the cycle last year. And as you'll recall, our joint application last year scored really well and was awarded nearly $12 million for 4 projects, totaling 349 units in Santa Rosa's urban core, 38% of them affordable. This year, I'm in preliminary discussions with developers of 6 different projects that are in the pipeline, totaling 612 units. 57 of them would be deed restricted affordable, and all are interested in considering the merits of a joint application for this round of infill infrastructure grant funding. The laundry list of eligible costs really helps developers reduce their overall project costs. If they can get infill infrastructure grant money for water and sewer, streets and road improvements, transit linkages, traffic mitigation devices, pedestrian and bicycle facilities. That really helps to get their projects to the point where they actually can pencil out. And on the Affordable Housing Sustainable Communities Grant, that program has $375 million in this round of funding. And this program is administered through the Strategic Growth Council. Funding through for the ASIC program is provided from the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund. It's an account established to receive cap and trade auction proceeds. Funding in the next round, following this one, will fall significantly because auction proceeds are down just precipitously. So the Affordable Housing Sustainable Communities Grant actually funds housing units, which the Infill Infrastructure Grant doesn't. in addition to programming to support the residents in the affordable housing. I want to thank the Red Board for supporting applications last year that were awarded well over $37 million in funding. I'm hoping we can get strong applications in this funding cycle, and we're working on building a pipeline of applications for future funding cycles. Having smart and continued operation is a real game changer, and it's really critical to being in a strong position for tapping into these state funding sources. So quickly, here are the timelines we're looking at. The both the Infill Infrastructure Grant and the Affordable Housing Sustainable Housing Grant or Sustainable Communities Grants will have notices of funding availability come out in November. Applications are expected to be due at the end of February in both cases, and unless they push the timeline out as they did last year. And then awards are announced in May for Infill Infrastructure Grant and June for the Affordable Housing Sustainable Communities Grant. So I've been using the draft guidelines that are out to assess projects that are far enough along in the entitlement pipeline to determine a fit for these programs. Been in regular communication with stakeholders in assessing these opportunities. I've hosted and attended several workshops with housing and community development to gain understanding around these funding opportunities. The programs are somewhat complex, as we've discussed in the past, and do require some technical assistance, especially on the Affordable Housing Sustainable Communities Grant, because you've got to do really detailed GHG reduction calculations. Today, it's really not possible to commit to submitting an application in either case, but we do know that applications require time-intensive coordination between the RED, the grant writers, developers, and public agencies that might be involved in the applications. So with so many unknowns at this time, it's not possible to fully assess the scope of the application process or even the total cost of grant consulting services. But what we do know is that it may be necessary to contract a consultant before the next RED board meeting in December in order to stay on deadline for the application. So finally, I'm requesting authority to contract if needed with Kevin Roden, the founder and CEO of Community Development Resource Group, the firm we used last year, in an amount not to exceed $20,000. Roden and his staff, Kevin and his staff, have worked with City of Santa Rosa, our CDC, SMART, JobLink, MidPen, Burbank Housing, and other developers on state funding opportunities. Have a really successful track record. In the last round of Affordable Housing Sustainable Communities funding, CDRG, or Kevin Roden and his team, won over $200 million in awards, including the nearly $38 million that was awarded to projects in Santa Rosa. He's a former affordable housing developer himself. He's widely respected throughout the state as an authority on infill infrastructure grant and affordable housing sustainable communities grant. So that concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions that the board might have, and I'm going to stop sharing my screen while we do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Any questions from the board?
I had one, Chair Fleming. I think there might be an issue with the dates, unless I'm reading it wrong, on the notice of funding availability. It says that if you can go back to that slide.
Okay. I don't have
a slide, otherwise I'd give it to you. But it basically has the date November 2021 and 2021 for the affordable housing system.
Oh.
That would be going backwards in time, right?
You got me. You're right.
I caught it.
November 2020 is what it should say.
Michelle,
I'm sorry about that.
Times that you've caught me, I get to catch you every now and then.
Apologies.
Okay, no big deal. I'm really excited to hear that the awards will be announced by the spring. I think that's great. I guess I just had one comment. Was, you know, I think with COVID and with everything else going on and the COVID economic recession and still being in the purple, I think one of the things that we're seeing and being reminded of is that the lack of affordable housing is probably our number one healthcare need right now in terms of social equity. You know, it is that lack of affordable health, a lack of affordable housing that has caused so much pain. And it contributes to essential workers not being able to feel that they can stay home when they get sick, because when they've got 70% of their paycheck going towards their housing, it contributes to anxiety and the, if we need any additional anxiety between fires and disasters and COVID and everything else we're facing right now, but a tremendous amount of anxiety. It just contributes to just about everything you can think of in our community. And I just really want to drive this home, because I think we need to keep saying this over and over again, that it is a healthcare issue by not having enough affordable housing. So these are a really exciting opportunity. This is what the Red is all about when we formed it. And I just wanted to thank the executive director for moving forward so swiftly. And with that funding too, that's coming down the pike, I'm excited. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay. I'll open public comment. Michelle, did we receive any recorded public comment?
No public comment was provided in advance for this item.
Okay. Hannah, are there any members of the listening public who would like to make public comment?
All right. Giving them a moment. And at this time, Chair Fleming, I am not seeing any raised hands.
Okay, I will close public comment. Anything else from the board prior to our vote? Okay, Michelle, will you please take a roll call vote?
I'd be happy to. Supervisor Zane?
Aye.
Councilmember Tibbetts?
Aye.
Chairperson Fleming?
Aye.
We'll record 3 ayes and an absent vote for Supervisor Rabbit.
All right. Item 5, informational item, Red Housing Fund. At this time, I'd like to invite presenters Ulysse Leapins, Olivia Speck and Daniela Greville from Fourth Street Advisors, and Rich Gross from the Enterprise Community Partners to present.
All right, I'm going to spend a minute elevating them. And before I turn it over to them, I'll make some introductory remarks. But first, let me move them to panelists. All right. So while we're waiting for them to turn on their microphones and their video, I want to just share that when we last met in August, your board voted to begin work on phase 2 of the Housing Fund initiative. And I'm pleased to report that steady progress has been made since then, both on the structural pieces, as well as attracting capital to seed the fund. This effort took a giant step forward when the Board of Supervisors set aside $10 million of its PG&E settlement funds as a loan to seed the fund with one very significant condition that I think we're all aware of. We all have a great respect for the city's process, and I understand that they'll meet on November 17th to consider and deliberate on what they might do with their settlement funds. But I don't want to make any assumptions on what might happen there, and really want to sit on the sidelines respectfully and watch that public process play out. So while today's presentation is informational only, we're nonetheless excited to share the progress that has been made. I want to invite Rich Gross from Enterprise Community Partners to share a few thoughts before he turns it over to the folks from Forsyth Street Advisors. Rich?
Sure. Thanks, Michelle, and thanks for inviting me to the meeting. This is a really exciting opportunity, I think, and there are lots of communities that want to create housing funds like this, and lots of communities that don't get anywhere with it. I think that the kind of broad-based support is that you have is really key to the creation of the fund. I also think the focus on high-density urban core development is really critical. I really think that that's important for the future of both the county and Santa Rosa. And it's really important for mitigation in the future. It's important for disaster recovery and for really any kind of sound urban development, transit-oriented urban development. So I think that this is really a great step for both the county and the municipalities. Michelle's leadership has been fantastic. I heard someone say earlier how impressed they are with Michelle, and I am too. So I just want to say that. And the board support of her is really key to any kind of success. And for Forsyth, I've worked with Forsyth, Enterprise worked with Forsyth on a number of places. And I can honestly say they are the best in the country for the development of housing funds. You're in great hands working with them, and let me turn that over to them with that in mind.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rich and Michelle. And we are very pleased to be talking and presenting to you all today. As Rich and Michelle said, we've made a lot of progress since we last met, and we continue to be very excited about how this is moving forward. Michelle, I'll go ahead and share my screen if that works. It doesn't. I need to, host has disabled participant screen sharing.
Let me see what I can do about that. I'm going to make you a co-host.
Great. Okay. Can everyone see my screen? Great. So just to take you through what we intend to be talking about today, we'll update you on where we are with our phase two scope of work, and then take you through a couple of our thoughts and considerations on various aspects of the fund creation, how the capital raising is going, which Michelle has touched on a little bit, as well as the steps that we'll take to really solidify the fund's creation, and then finish up with next steps. So this is our phase two work plan. And we've talked a little bit about this, but basically the work plan is divided among three different scopes of work focused on capitalization, both from the public and private sector, as well as kind of an evaluation of an appropriate legal structure for the fund, which will be key to actually getting it set up and capitalized, as well as the governance management and operational capacities that a fund needs to have. And these are all sort of intertwined, and you know, certain elements of a legal structure will affect the capitalization, how the fund is governed. So just we're being careful to make sure that we're thinking about these things equally as we go along. And then here's just a preliminary timeline of what we think this phase two will look like. So it starts really with kind of a more focus on capital raising, both from the public and private sectors, making sure that we're continuing discussions with the public sector so that we have, so that we're able to reach a commitment. And then targeting a fund closing in July 2021. This is, I would just caveat this as being pretty aggressive from where we usually fund. It generally takes about a year to create. And so this is a little bit more speedy than we're used to seeing, but if everything goes according to plan at the public level and we continue to, we're able to work through an appropriate legal structure as well as kind of closing on the Capitol, that date could definitely be possible. So I will turn it over to Daniela to discuss a little bit more about how we're thinking about capital raising from the public sector.
Hey everyone. So I'm gonna just discuss some of the proposed terms for the public agency funds that would be loaned into the fund. And really the idea here again is that these funds would be as flexible and as low cost as possible so that the fund could then in turn provide low cost loans to the housing developers. So the borrower of this fund, that the exact entity is still, is still to be determined. But basically the public agency capital will be loaned into this fund. And then in a few slides, we'll talk a little bit about sort of the legal structure and some of the considerations in terms of determining the exact borrower entity. As I just mentioned, we are targeting, both funding from the city of Santa Rosa and Sonoma County. Ideally, we'd receive $10 million from each of those entities for a total of $20 million to really capitalize this fund before we, can find additional funding from philanthropic and private investors as well. So in terms of geography, the fund will support projects around the county that also meet the RED criteria. It is likely that many of the projects that will be ready to go when the fund is first launched will be in downtown Santa Rosa, and then other areas may mature down the road in the next cycle. So we just want to be cognizant of basically making sure we can meet, both the city and the county's regional housing needs. The term of these funds, so we're looking at these public agency funds being loaned into this fund for a 20-year term with an option to extend at 0% interest. And I just want to clarify that this 0% interest rate is what these funds, what these public agency funds would be loaned into this fund for. There will be a separate term sheet for the loans that this fund actually makes out to the housing developers, and those housing developers will have an interest rate, but ideally that would be as low as possible so that their projects can be financially feasible. And so just for example, if this was a 0% interest rate to the fund and we loaned out, a loan out to a housing developer for 3% interest, that difference, that 3% difference would be called the spread. And that's what the fund can then use to basically, generate income and cover its own costs to be self-sufficient. The next thing is just subordination. So we would expect that the public agency funds would be subordinated to all other capital that the fund can raise. So typically public funds can be much more flexible than you might be able to raise from, a philanthropic investor or a bank, for example. And then in terms of just sort of governance, we do anticipate having roles for the investors in the fund's governance structure. So there might be such thing as an advisory capacity where each investor into the fund would have an advisory role in terms of the investments that are made. You can go to the next slide. And then just in terms of the use of the fund proceeds, we've talked about this in prior meetings, but basically once this fund is capitalized and ready to start loaning out to projects, the funds would be treated as loans. So there's a couple of different loan products. One would be a subordinate loan for affordable housing, and that would really be meant to fill that last gap in the project's capital stack to get that project across the finish line. And then the next one would be subordinate loans for middle income and market rate projects. And so this is the loan that would be a construction loan that would be approximately 10% of the project's total development costs, which would be subordinate to the conventional construction loan. And then the next component is that that construction loan could then convert to a permanent loan. And it would again be a mezzanine permanent loan that would be subordinate to the bank's first position loan. And then in limited circumstances that could convert to equity. And then the last thing is that in addition to using these funds to provide loans to the housing developers, it could also be used to meet various financial covenants. And so what that really means is that, again, sometimes when you have, maybe philanthropic or private funders, they may have requirements for the fund. So there, for example, there might be a certain minimum liquidity requirement that the fund has to have a certain amount of cash on hand at all times. And so these funds could also be used for things such as that. And so that's the kind of short story of the term sheet. And we can jump to the next slide.
All right, so we've started off by focusing on the public sector, and that certainly is the initial source of capital that we're focusing on. Since we've been making such good progress to date, knock on wood, with respect to that funding, we've put together a tracker to see if we can raise additional capital from other sources as well. So I would group those into these major categories where reaching out to foundations and philanthropies, corporations, and financial institutions or banks to see if we can raise other capital that would be complementary to the money that would be available from the public sector. There's a couple of main sources of capital that we're looking for. One of them is we are going to have additional costs to pay for with respect to fund startup. That can include just everything that it takes from a legal perspective to get to a closing on the fund. And then even after the fund is closed, there's going to be a short period of time before the fund is able to make investments when, as Anila was saying, there's a spread between what the fund's cost of capital is and what it gets on the loans that it makes. And that pays for operations, but there's going to be a window before we actually have funds out the door that are generating that spread. So there's going to be a need for grant funding to pay for some of those costs. So we're hopeful of being able to raise that from some of these sources. And in addition, raising more long-term, low-cost, flexible debt to the extent available would augment the sources that we have available from the public sector, make the fund bigger, and make it possible for us to have additional impact. We do have a tracker, we're starting outreach, and we're using the fact that we have this progress with the public sector to try and leverage these additional complementary commitments as well. Let's go to the next slide. So in thinking through phase two, the first order of attack was certainly to see if we could raise capital. At this point, we're very hopeful of being able to raise capital. So we're starting to think also about additional components of the work plan. And one of the key ones that we're starting to really dive into is what's the appropriate legal structure for the fund entity. And the starting point is, of course, could the Red be the home for the fund? There's a lot of reasons why that would be wonderful if it could work. There's an enormous mission alignment and local knowledge that the Red, its staff, its board of directors, other stakeholders all bring to the work that the fund would be trying to do. There's all the existing relationships and it's an entity that already exists. So there wouldn't be the additional time needed to set up something new or create a relationship with another entity. So for those reasons, that's our starting point. But there are reasons why it may not be possible. And that's why we need to really dive in and understand what limitations, if any, would apply to this structure. One of the chief things to think about is just as a joint powers authority, the Red may have certain legal and other limitations with respect to whether it could administer this fund. It may also create additional costs by layering on additional requirements onto the funds that it disperses to developers. There also may be certain approval or other requirements that make it harder for the fund to move at the pace of the market, which is important with respect to affordable housing investment funds. So we need to understand all of those things. And in addition, the Red is not currently set up to be a financing entity. So there are some missing capacities that we would need to identify others who can provide those services and either bring them into the Red or contract for them otherwise. So along with the Red, we have some other alternatives that we're considering, and let's go to the next slide. So just a few main categories of alternatives that we're considering. One of them is to set up a new subsidiary of an existing CDFI. Existing CDFIs, those are community development financial institutions. They include entities like Enterprise, like LISC, like the San Francisco Housing Accelerator Fund, like other organizations regionally. And certainly with Rich, for example, at Enterprise, we've used this structure before to create funds with Enterprise where we set up a new limited liability company, LLC. And that's a subsidiary of the CDFI that then sort of provides the home for where the funds can live and provides some additional capacities as well with respect to potentially underwriting, management of reserve funds, things like that. So that's certainly one alternative to explore. And the main upside of that is just that CDFIs are lending institutions. They do have a lot of the capacities that would be needed to administer a fund already existing. The downside can be that CDFIs can be larger regional or even national organizations. And one of the things that's going to make this fund special and really going to make it work is the fact that it's going to be very locally focused on Sonoma County and certainly initially downtown Santa Rosa. So that local focus, the concentration of the resources that we're able to raise on this specific geography in a way that's very attuned to the needs of this geography is going to be very important. A subsidiary for a local foundation, this is just, I would say this is more in the category of idea. We've never set up a fund this way before, but it's something that we've explored. And just thinking about Sonoma County, there are some candidates for local foundations that do have many of the things that we already have with the RED, a sort of mission alignment, a strong local focus, also some ability to administer funds potentially. On the downside, the foundations are set up to administer much different types of investments generally, or not investments, more like grant giving. And in addition, there are significant legal and tax implications for taking a foundation and using it to run a fund that we would need to understand. And then lastly, creation of a new 501c3. The Housing Accelerator Fund in San Francisco is an example of this that we worked with Rich to set up. An independent 501c3 gives us maximum flexibility, maximum ability to build out the organization exactly in a way that is custom to Sonoma County and Santa Rosa. The downside is really it's a matter of timing. That could take longer, and it could also be a bit more expensive than the other options if we need to staff up that new entity. So to sum up, there's a few lead criteria that we're thinking about. One of them is mission alignment. Another is cost and operational efficiency. And next one is the requirements of the fund's investors. They may need to be able to invest, for example, in a nonprofit. And lastly, complexity and timing associated with the fund's creation. And let's go to the next slide. All right.
So just to recap where we're headed over the next few months or so, we want to continue to meet with the public sector to make sure that these indicative commitments become realized. And so that will mean kind of more of this discussion on terms that we've been discussing today, and then kind of seeing that through towards actual drafting of the loan agreements with ideally both the city and county. And so we will make ourselves available to assist with that in whatever way is needed. Also, we've started outreach to the various private and philanthropic investors that Ulysses and Michelle described, and we will continue to do so over the next few months, working to get commitments from those parties as well. And finally, as Ulysses alluded to, there are a number of legal and tax implications that each different legal structure is associated with. And we will need to continue to work through those. There are various costs associated with each one of those as well. And so we will be spending a large amount of our time over the next few months evaluating those alternatives and hopefully proceeding with a solid recommendation to the RED staff and board based on this evaluation. And as I said, this is going to entail sort of different costs associated with each different model. And so we'll work on putting together sort of a financial analysis of each of these opportunities as well. And of course, if any of you have any additional questions, we are available to discuss anything, including this presentation or anything else as needed. So that covers our presentation. I'll stop sharing my screen.
Thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions? Okay. Let me pull up the notes here. Seeing no questions, I'll open public comment. Michelle, did we receive any public comment prior to the meeting?
There were no comments submitted on this item in advance of the meeting.
Okay. And then are there any members of the public wishing to make public comment at this time?
And if you are an attendee, a member of the public wishing to comment, please raise your hand. Or if you're attending by phone, you can press star 9 to raise your hand.
And at this time, Chair Fleming, I'm seeing no raised hands.
Okay, seeing none, I will close public comment and just say how hopeful I am that we get this fund up and running in this record speed. Hopefully it is record speed, and that we get the units built and our community cared for in the way that they deserve to be cared for. So any additional comments or Mr. Tibbetts?
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to say thank you as well. It's definitely exciting. Just a quick comment on some of the options that you have there. I'd be the most interested in the formation of our own 501c3. We've got a pretty benevolent community and a lot of hospitals that are required to give. And I think this should be a natural vehicle for a lot of our donors, since affordable housing is such a key issue on everybody's mind these days. The other thing I wanted to mention is I've been doing my own research into lending for the city of Santa Rosa. And Exchange Bank, which is a local bank with us, will actually can do some pretty creative lending using outside entities' money. They have their own spread they have to cover, so it might negate us from actually having any meaningful impact. But it may be worth a conversation if you're looking for a quick and easy way to get money lent out to the community. So thanks.
Thank you. Anything else?
Chair Fleming, there is a member of the public who has a hand raised now.
Okay, well, I also see that Supervisor Zane has her hand up. And so I'll take public comments again after we finish this portion.
Thank you, Chair Fleming. I just did want to say that I think the idea of setting up a nonprofit is a really good one. It allows board members too to fundraise with private entities, and having a lot of experience in this, 14 years of being an executive director for a large and a small nonprofit, I think this is one of the most compelling asks that we can make today, is to ask private donors to invest. We do have wonderful local banks too that we want to, share the love with, so to speak. We have banks that are out there helping the community, and I think it's really important that we do bank with a local bank and ask them to match some of these funds too. So that's my two cents, and thank you for setting this up, or setting this in motion. And I think with the public entities coming to the table and offering $20 million, keep my fingers crossed, Santa Rosa, then I think that makes a really strong case for the private entities. And that's what we really need to tee up right now. So thanks.
Thank you very much. And now can we enable Mr. McKenzie, Vice Mayor McKenzie from Roanoke Park, to comment?
Yes, and Michelle, would you like to put up a timer slide?
Sure, that'll take me just a moment. And Zach Berkowitz also had his hand raised. So maybe after Council Member McKenzie, we can call on Zach Berkowitz. And let me share my screen.
All right. And I will, for our first commenter, you should now be able to unmute yourself and please state your name for the record.
Am I now unmuted?
Yes.
Good, thank you. Hi, this is Jake McKenzie, Roanoke Park City Council. I had the opportunity to meet informally with your executive director last week. I'm at the moment on the Bay Area Housing Finance Authority, which is the membership of the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, and also on ABAG's Housing Committee, which is a parallel organization to work with the Bay Area Housing Finance Authority as we start our Bay Area-wide operations. So I have a lot of interest in what you guys are up to, hence my watching the presentation that was just made. But if I'm more parochial, I would observe, as I understand it, that on your second anniversary, you are able to consider the possibility of other jurisdictions in Sonoma County joining you, and so I just wanted to indicate that you presumably will be publicizing that fact to the other eight cities in Sonoma County, and also your consultants who were just presenting. Just a question, have they been considering, you know, what the implications would be of other cities joining in to the proposals that they have been making to you. But anyway, thank you so much for allowing me to comment and appreciate the good work you guys are doing.
Thank you, Vice Mayor McKenzie. Mr. Berkowitz, are you still with us?
And I do not see the hand raised, but if you saw that, Michelle, I'm happy to unmute.
I received a text from Mr. Berkowitz that he had his hand raised. It went down. If he's still there, if you can unmute him and give him the opportunity.
Absolutely. All right. Should now be able to unmute yourself.
Perfect. Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
First of all, I'd like to thank Michelle. You have done a fantastic job with this, and we were part of the recipients of the infill grant, so you kicked ass on that as well, and you guys are doing a fantastic job. Forsyth, you guys really are getting it, and it's nice to see as a developer that things are happening. I have a question. One of the issues that's going to come up is prevailing wage, and does this have to be a public fund? So that's the question. If it weren't a public fund, it would probably make it a lot easier on the prevailing wage issues that are going to come up. And if it is a prevailing wage issue that comes up, could a certain portion of the project be prevailing wage? Like, for example, on our project, we've got 116 units. All the units are modular built, or 99 are going to be modularly built. And those units are built in a union shop. So, you know, a large chunk of this project is going to be prevailing wage. And could there be a percentage of money that gets spent for prevailing wage in a percentage that's spent at market rate? That's it. Keep up the great work. We really appreciate it. And I think you guys are onto something really good.
Well, Well, okay then. Do we have any additional public comment?
And I'm seeing no further hands raised.
All right. So that was an informational item. So no action needs to be taken. Do any board members have any comments, questions before we move on?
Just a comment also. So on the issue of prevailing wage, I don't know why we feel like we have to justify prevailing wage. The county just, if I can just be so frank, because we want to pay people cheap labor, and buildings fall down. I mean, honestly, the county just started an equity office. And, you know, I'll be damned if the county is going to advocate to not pay prevailing wage with an equity office. So that's my comment about that. But then I also wanted to add that since we're sitting here in an extreme fire event and we're all on pins and needles, and I think we've done 3 briefings since Saturday, the board has. The infill housing in urban areas of Sonoma County, focusing on that type of housing, that is also one of the best defenses against wildfire. I mean, Coffee Park was a bit of an anomaly because the fire was so hot and so quick moving that it jumped the 6-lane freeway. But for the most part, the homes that were lost in these last 3 fires were in zones that were rural residential and just rural. And it is a tragedy to lose any property. But I'll tell you, if we really want to look at the defense against wildfire, and wildfire is still going to be a part of our reality, we've got to build more housing in these urban infill areas rather than out in the forests. As much as we love that area, I mean, we're so lucky to live here in Northern California. The loss of property and life has been significant. And so I'm gonna step up and say that's also a good defense against wildfire destruction. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you for those excellent comments, Mr. Tibbetts.
Thanks. I wanted to comment on prevailing wage too, and I'll use a up-to-date example. Right now on the Santa Rosa Commons, that's the project that Samans and DePaul is working on, formerly known as the Gold Coin. Our original construction costs were estimated to be $5.2 million, and then with prevailing wage, it raised to $6.5 million. So there's very real cost implications with prevailing wage and impacts on housing. Now that said, you know, when I got those numbers, it was definitely like, oh my gosh, where are we gonna scrape together the additional money? But, you know, you really should pay prevailing wage in Sonoma County. I mean, the people swinging the hammers have gotta be able to afford to live in the houses that they're building. But I bring this up because I think this is gonna dovetail in eventually with the conversation about how we loan money. And you've heard me say this before, that I do not want to create a fund that gives somebody $10 million that they have to pay back at the end of a 15, 20, or 30-year term. The payments have to begin immediately upon occupancy of the building once the building is being bought up or leased up. Because then it doesn't matter so much if you're paying prevailing wage, because you're lending the money out. It pays the wages, it pays for the construction, but then you're collecting it back and rebuilding the fund. So to me, those two are very important. They should go hand in hand. So just wanted to say that for the benefit of the folks with Foresight that are here. And I'll be raising this again down the road. So thanks, you guys.
Yeah. And just to tack on to the prevailing wage conversation here is that for one, you know, building something that has essentially become just a human right, or not become, is a human right, and also is a huge economic generator, doing it at the expense of some of our most vulnerable workers is unacceptable. We're looking to build long-term paths to the middle class and not erode it by undercutting labor. And I don't just mean organized labor, we're talking about just prevailing wages. So if you're looking to pay people less than market rate, which is what a prevailing wage is in nearly every situation. And in looking to make a profit off of that, I invite you to go live with a family who's living with those conditions and see if that still feels right to you.
Can I add something else to Chair Fleming about the development fees that Jack was talking about? So years ago, when I first got into office, a group of construction leaders came to me and said, when we have to pay these development fees, it's really a big deal. Because we can't often pencil out a project if we have to pay those development fees at the very beginning. We have to have the income in order to pay them, and they need to be done. So you can put them on at the end, or you can put them on at the beginning, but at the end makes sense because then they have really, they're generating real income, like you said, Jack. So we didn't have many people, there were too many loopholes and it didn't go so well, the project. Or even though, you know, we had good intent, but when a tennis wick came in about 3 years ago and cleaned it up. So now we have had takers in terms of getting the development fees on at the impact fees, the impact development fees on at the end rather than the beginning. And I think Santa Rosa, Jack and Victoria have the same policy, do they not?
Yeah, our water department will only start collecting those steep water sewer impact fees upon post-occupancy is what it's called.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, and none of what we're looking to do here is to get in the way of development.
Yes, exactly. We want to get things done and as soon as possible. So anyway, thanks also for your comments, Jack.
So just for the listening public, I just want to make very clear that what we're interested in is fostering development without cutting, labor corners here. And so while we appreciate that it does add additional, while I appreciate that it adds additional cost, there are costs, social costs associated with not paying prevailing wage. But that's a discussion that if the board wants to have later on, we can also agendize it and have that discussion. Moving on, item 6, executive director report.
All right, it will take me just a minute to get set up for that, but I want to thank Rich Gross from Enterprise and Ulysse, Daniela, and Olivia from Forsyth for the excellent and thought-provoking presentation.
Yes, thank you very much, and I will be back in 1 minute, so we'll lose quorum for a second, but is that okay, Michelle?
Sure, it'll take me that much time to get set up.
Okay.
Me too, bathroom break.
Yep.
I had to go too, I guess.
Hannah, can you return Rich, Olivia, and Daniela to attendee?
Yes, will do.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And Michelle, I think you will need to return Olivia because she is a co-host.
Okay. Supervisor Zane, when you're back, let us know.
You have to sing happy birthday twice when you wash your hands, so it takes a little longer.
You should have left your microphone on so we could hear that.
What was that movie like, the Steve Martin, where he does that?
Yeah.
Or even better, the one where the guy admits to that on that HBO series, The Jinx. Okay,
we regress.
Back to not talking to yourself in the bathroom with the mic on. Ms. Whitman, Ms. Michelle Whitman, would you please give us your report?
I'd be happy to. Thank you, Chair Fleming. So you all have the executive director's report in your meeting packet, so I won't review it in its entirety. I will, however, highlight a few items I think are of particular interest. You just received the update on the progress made toward creating a housing fund here. I continue to pursue grant funding to cover the costs associated with Forsyth Street Advisors' work plan, as well as for legal and accounting services we may need as final steps to create the fund are completed. To attract funding, I've been really busy submitting letters of introduction, applications, and proposals to a range of grant makers, including Kaiser Permanente, who did award a $90,000 grant, Providence, St. Joseph Health, Bank of America Foundation, Ford Foundation, Wells Fargo, Poppy Bank, the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation, Exchange Bank, Enterprise Community Partners, Burbank Housing, and United Way of the Wine Country, along with Rebuild North Bay. Like I said, Kaiser Permanente has awarded a $90,000 grant, and Burbank Housing has committed $10,000 to fund the phase two work plan. Several funding requests were denied while others are still pending, and I'm still beating the bushes to find others. The drive to identify funding will continue until the full cost of the phase two work plan has been raised. As Forsyth Street Advisors noted, and I noted earlier, the Board of Supervisors conducted a public meeting to deliberate on the allotment of a portion of their PG&E settlement funds related to the Tubbs Fire. Supervisor Zane really charged out of the gate with that conversation and put a number on the table that she got her colleagues on the board to buy into. So that's where that's how they landed at the $10 million mark. And I'm really grateful. A lot of members of our community are also grateful that the county has committed to loan the Red Housing Fund that significant amount of money. Again, totally respectful of the city's public process, and I'll be on the sidelines watching that play out. Like Forsyth said, we're working together to pursue several streams of funding, both to add capital to the fund and to support the fund's startup overhead. Red Board members have offered and will have opportunities to meet with potential funders along with fund advisors and myself as we go through this process. And I did want you all to know, since it came up during the board discussion on the last board item, that we have reached out to local banks, and we do have a meeting, I think later this week, with Forsyth and Exchange Bank and myself. So we'll see how that goes. Wanted to let you know that targeted effort went into the following activities as well. Been making a lot of presentations to community groups, including with Generation Housing and to Santa Rosa Together. Reaching out to a lot of different stakeholders. Chairperson Fleming and I teamed up on a presentation on the densification of downtown Santa Rosa. That went really well. I'm providing technical support to developers for different grant funds that are out there, including the two we talked about earlier, Infill Infrastructure Grant and the Affordable Housing Sustainable Communities Grant. Provided technical assistance for a transit-oriented development grant application that Burbank Housing, along with Catholic Charities, have in right now. We haven't heard if any funds will be awarded, but we should be hearing soon on that one. I'm always cultivating stakeholder relationships within the housing production, financial, philanthropic, social justice, and conservation issue networks. I am working on collaborative grant applications and fund development activities with Generation Housing and Sustainable Sonoma, among others. I participate in a housing production work group for California Housing Partnership, as well as participating on the California Coalition for Rural Housing's Disaster Recovery Committee. I attend public meetings featuring local infill housing projects within the Ridge jurisdiction, and other items of interest in the housing space. I'm definitely advocating for local housing-related grant applications. And we know that grant applications are scored objectively, but we've also learned that advocacy makes a difference. When they lay their eyes on your application, if they know you and know your project proponents and know the project in advance, it definitely helps. And that was certainly the case with the Housing and Community Development Awards that were announced earlier in the spring. I am participating in various training programs, including housing finance training. I like to attend the virtual meetings of the diverse community groups that are active in Sonoma County. I've now completed my Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Certificate Program through Cornell University. And as a reminder, I did that on my personal time and at my personal expense. And I know we're all on a continuum when it comes to moving closer to our diversity, equity, and inclusion goals. You never arrive. You're never totally enlightened, and you can never claim absolute success. You just keep working at it. Finally, I stay in close contact with elected officials and public sector staff. That's definitely been important around the Red Housing Fund because there are so many questions about what it is, what it could do, what the potential is. Want to talk a little bit more about community engagement. Since we last met, I've participated in a robust schedule of virtual meetings, convenings, and webinars to really exchange information with the ecosystem of housing stakeholders in our community. But like all of our local organizations, the RED exists in an extremely disrupted operating environment, which adds complexity to community engagement efforts. And you know, we can't lose track of that we're really still in a startup phase. And notwithstanding these challenges, the RED has been really a visible and accessible presence in our community. The RED has arranged and hosted dozens of workshops, interviews, and meetings for stakeholders and co-applicants that are seeking public funding to get their projects launched. The RED continues to exist as a contract agency and as such, really depend on the RED's members and community organizations to leverage our joint community engagement efforts for maximum impact, particularly with regard to marginalized communities. As the RED fulfills its goal to attract and allocate resources, community engagement will become even more essential. It should also be noted, I think, that the RED's members, the City of Santa Rosa and County of Sonoma, have recently strengthened their commitments to equity and community engagement. County has its newly established Office of Equity under the leadership of Alegria de la Cruz, who I know we all love and respect. And the city has added Magali Tellis as director of its community engagement division. I have well-established relationships with both of these leaders, And as they build capacity, the RED will be involved in and supportive of their efforts directed at inclusion. The RED supports and informs the work of non-governmental community partners as well. For example, with outreach events critical to the culturally considerate development of Tierra de Rosas, which was formerly known as Roseland Village. I was on a Zoom meeting this morning with the developers, Midpen, of Tierra de Rosas, and they've got an effort currently underway for active community engagement around street naming for that master development. Additionally, the RED participates in or attends generation housing events for a wide range of audiences. I've been super impressed with the Gen H team and their progress and outreach so far. Very recently, I worked with Gen H and affordable housing advocates to once again appeal to the state's tax credit allocation committee for the equitable allocation of federal disaster low-income housing tax credits to Sonoma County that Congressman Thompson worked so hard to have appropriated to us. And Chairperson Fleming has been involved in that effort as well. And little by little, we're getting them closer to the point of really an equitable allocation to Sonoma County. So to wrap up, I've really been inspired by my observation of recent Board of Supervisors, City Council, and other meetings of legislative bodies that are just sending such a clear message that housing production continues to rate among the highest priorities for government officials at all levels. We're really seeing more public resources leveraging private capital to help move projects forward. As I said earlier, given the urgent need for more housing, we simply can't afford to lose any momentum. And you've all made comments to that effect in the course of this board meeting and others. Each disaster we've experienced has placed just incredible additional pressure on our local housing stock. We have to do everything we can to keep roofs over people's heads. Like Supervisor Zane said earlier, disasters, including our wildfires and floods and now COVID-19, are really just exposing the county's racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic inequities and providing fertile ground, sadly, for disproportionate impacts on vulnerable or marginalized populations. This RED board has just been absolutely steadfast in support of smart growth. Particularly in regards to housing across the affordability spectrum, noting that every single member of our community stands to benefit from a housing market that's in balance, a housing market that's climate smart, is affordable to area workers, and is accessible to communities of color and other historically disadvantaged groups, and one that includes a diversity of housing options. So, in closing, thank you, RED board members, for just being incredibly supportive of this work. Our community is taking notice of the synergies around housing. And lately, I just feel a strong, strong sense of optimism in our community around housing. Thank you for your time and attention. And that concludes my remarks.
You rock, Michelle.
You guys rock.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say too, Jack. She rocks. And in her spare time, she builds tiny home villages.
Thank you so much for everything you're doing for us.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, thank you. We rock together.
All right. Did we receive any public comment prior to the meeting? I'll open public comment.
No, there was no public comments submitted on this item in advance of the meeting.
Okay, do we have anybody wishing to make public comment at this time?
If you're a member of the public attending and would like to raise your hand via the Zoom platform, you can do that, or you can press *9 if you're attending by phone.
And at this time, I'm seeing no hands raised.
All right, thank you very much. I will now close public comment. Before we move on to adjournment, anything else? Okie dokie.
Thanks, Chair.
All right, so our next Red Board meeting will be scheduled for Thursday, December 17th, 2020 at 1 p.m. It's a little bit off our regular schedule due to holidays. Wish you a happy and safe November, and we will see you back here in December. Thank you, everybody. This meeting is now adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Fleming. Thank you, Board.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.